greetings from Off the Grid at BBS Radio, where there are exits from the world of corporate greed. You're tuned into the show that helps you climb off those grids of the corporate state to achieve personal freedom in all parts of your life. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of personal revolution aimed at awakening the vision of America that nourishes the spirit within, connecting all of us and making sure we arrive at the destination. You can call us toll-free to 888-228-4494, or from worldwide, you can call 877-489-6350, or the direct line is 530-776-5154. Do call. And I want to explain what happened last week when we were so rudely interrupted and I disappeared into that what sounded to me like an avalanche of static. According to the guys on the station, I just disappeared while we were in the middle of our interview with Joel Saladin. Joel was talking about getting us off the food grid and back to eating food that really nourishes you, body and spirit. Naturally, my phone was also off when I disappeared. But it was on just 3 minutes after we went off the air. Just imagine that. Could it have been coincidence? Was it harassment? Decide for yourself. The incident did start talk among some other talk show hosts who are having the same problem, so do expect updates. Remember the grids. In your local area, in your personal life, in every imaginable way, you're living on interlocking grids that suck you dry. You are working harder for less all the time, just like that little hamster in the corporate cage whose efforts enrich only those we never really see. It's ugly, and it is intentional. The first step in the revolution is losing your illusions about what's really happening. On Off the Grids, we give you the exits from the grid, but even better, you get the portal to community, serenity, prosperity, and truth. Off the Grids is a show you need everyone in your local area to hear so that you can organize locally for liberty. We need to take back control at the local level, and that will be a real revolution. So help us help you. Ask your local station to stream us into your local area, and to do that, contact us at bbsradio.com. Now, my blog site is titled How the Neocons Stole Freedom, and is conveniently located at howtheneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. The story this week at the top is titled The Ron Paul Legacy of Freedom, How People Will Govern Themselves. One of the grids used to staple us to serfdom is politics. That little soap opera that they're running for us right now, that probably doesn't surprise you. Politics and perfectly horrible behavior are such a natural match. But the people will be heard. And Ron Paul supporters are not only being heard, they are changing politics and more than politics. Our guest tonight is an activist who will be talking about the revolution, so stay tuned for that. But first, a few small news items. U.S. troops to head to Pakistan. Beginning early next year, U.S. Special Forces are expected to vastly expand their presence in Pakistan as part of an effort to train and support indigenous counterinsurgency forces and clandestine counterterrorism units, according to defense officials involved in the planning. These Pakistan-centric operations will mark a shift for the U.S. military and for U.S.-Pakistan relations. In the aftermath of September 11th, the U.S. used Pakistani bases to stage movements into Afghanistan. Yet once the U.S. deposed the Taliban government and established its main operating base in Bagram, north of Kabul, U.S. forces left Pakistan almost entirely. Since then, Pakistan has restricted U.S. involvement in cross-border military operations as well as paramilitary operations on its soil. But the Pentagon has been frustrated by the inability of Pakistani national forces to control the borders or the frontier area, and Pakistan's political instability has heightened U.S. concern about Islamic extremists there. According to Pentagon sources, reaching a different agreement with Pakistan became a priority for the new head of the U.S. Special Operations Command, Admiral Eric T. Olson. Olson visited Pakistan in August, November, and again this month, meeting with Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf, Pakistani Joint Chiefs of Staff Committee Chairman General Tariq Maj, and Lieutenant General Mahad Masood Alam. Commander of the military and paramilitary troops in northwest Pakistan, Olson also visited the headquarters of the Frontier Corps, a separate paramilitary force recruited from Pakistan's border tribes. Now, a new agreement reported when it was still being negotiated last month has been finalized, and the first U.S. personnel should be on the ground in Pakistan by early in the new year, according to Pentagon sources. Now, that's what they say, but I have a few predictions. The assassination of former Prime Minister Binzar Bhutto is being blamed on Al-Qaeda. So is 9/11. Is there any truth in the mainstream news today at all? We should all ask that question. And here's a prediction. The price of oil will be going up. The largesse paid into the pockets of the now-deceased Bhutto will not be buying any favors for U.S. oil companies. Osama bin Laden will be used as the excuse to go to war in Pakistan within the next 3 months. These developments will be bad for the stability of the grid corporations worldwide. In fact, everything they do will now be bad for the grid corporations. And on the home front, Kevin Martin of the FCC will continue to work like a little beaver sell off the airways to big corporations. His allowance depends on it. On Christmas Day, this article was run by AP, Dateline, Washington, D.C. FCC split over effect of media ownership rule. Washington. The Republican chairman of the Federal Communications Commission is disputing Democratic assertions that a new rule loosening restrictions on media ownership is full of loopholes and will lead to a wave of mergers and fewer choices for consumers. Democratic Commissioner Michael Copps described the commission's decision approving the measure as, quote, one that would make George Orwell proud, unquote, referring to English author best known for his novels critiquing totalitarianism and for popularizing the phrase, quote, Big Brother is watching you, unquote. FCC Chairman Kevin Martin said the commission action was a relatively minor loosening of a single rule. The conflicting impressions say a lot about the diverse nature of the media ownership debate. Too much media in the hands of too few companies raises fears of an emerging corporate Big Brother and fewer news and information sources. Online party vote. The commission vote along strict party lines will allow a single company to own a television or radio station and a newspaper in the 20 largest metropolitan areas of the country. Quote, I think this was actually a very moderate attempt to adjust our rules to reflect some of the changes that are occurring in the marketplace, unquote, Martin told the Associated Press in a recent interview. Go online and read it all. You need to know. This is happening because of the implosion of the comm industries, and they're doing everything possible to hold on to their profits. And now, a couple little updates from the Ron Paul campaign. When you read my most recent article, you will find out some interesting things about the direction of the Ron Paul revolution. That revolution is distinct and very different from the clutch of paid staff in Arlington, Virginia. Starting on the 2nd of January, the Granny Warriors, its membership now enlarged to include a group of other aged people, will be in Iowa to support the primary effort there. Chris Moore, who is heading up the radio show that will be run from the Granny Warrior Mobile, told me today that they have signed a deal to handle that show with GCN, and they will be doing that from all the way across the country, from North Carolina to Iowa, where they will be covering the events at the primary caucuses, which should be interesting for all of us. And at the same time, you should perhaps visit the GCN network and see the Ron Paul Air Corps there. banners are being towed behind planes. You can donate. You can help make that happen. It's really very exciting, the idea that Ron Paul has his own Air Corps. Hundreds of veterans are now signing up also to support Ron Paul, which is something that's causing a certain amount of chagrin in other quarters. Republican presidential candidate and Texas Congressman Ron Paul continues to receive endorsements from veterans of America's Armed Services. In just a few days since launching an I Endorse Ron Paul page on ronpaul2008.com, the number of veterans who have endorsed Congressman Paul has grown to over 200. I actually believe there is another site where there's even more, which is another reason one needs to poke around the web and find everything. And now a few thoughts for the week ahead. This is our last show of 2007, which will move us into a new year. Let's consider just for a moment where we were last year at this time. Last year, the hopes for the Ron Paul campaign were sort of bleak. We were looking at perhaps maybe a rerun of 1988, and that, of course, wasn't, you know, particularly appealing. The divisions between the right and left seemed still pretty fixed. Most of us were worried that Bush did not intend to leave office at all. There were a lot of plans afoot that made it look like there was a real possibility that they were going to install martial law and never end it. We were all extremely worried about the fact that the Bill of Rights had been under attack. Habeas corpus no longer existed. Americans were thoroughly enmeshed in the grids, and we weren't even looking for the exits yet. We were just struggling to survive. And today things are changing, thanks in large part to the candidacy of Ron Paul for president. What we really needed was a reframing of the world, and Ron Paul's candidacy has provided a new frame that is simultaneously larger and smaller than the one we used before. Paradigm shifts are like that. One of the best tools you can use to understand what those in power really mean is to turn down the volume when they talk. So just imagine that television set where you hear Bush talking about liberty and freedom and individual rights and all those Islamic terrorists, and turn down the volume. Words lie. Action speaks truth in the most human terms. So watch carefully what they do, because if you watch them, they're going to tell you exactly what they're all about. And that is what, that really, that brings us to the top tonight, because our guest tonight is going to be talking about how the Ron Paul Revolution has impacted the world that we all live in, looking at the bleakness. We're starting to see indications that there is really hope out there for the world the way that we want it to be. Now, our guest tonight is Dan Garthwaite, and he is a Unix administrator who is about to take a very significant plunge and move where his convictions take him, and that's to New Hampshire. He's been involved in the Free State Project, which he's going to be telling you about. But right now he lives in Rhode Island, where they have just finished getting Ron Paul on the ballot. And he wrote me a letter just a little bit earlier, and I'm just going to read it to you as sort of a way to introduce him. Thanks for sharing that chapter. I read the first page and want to devote more attention to it later. I had sent him a little thing that I wrote. As for that subject, I'm going to do something I never do right now, take a nap. So if I don't answer the phone for the next hour and a half, don't panic. Melinda panics when she can't get her guest on the phone. By the way, the Ron Paul signatures are officially piled into the Secretary of State's office. That was a relief. We call the office, and the counts submitted here are valid signatures, okayed by the local towns and cities. For some reason, the state government feels the need to also verify all the verified signatures themselves. They're probably hoping. I am so very much looking forward to talking about what individuals can do right now for Ron Paul and help themselves find freedom in an unfree world. Dan. So please, without further ado, welcome Dan Garthwaite. Dan, are you there?
Hi, Melinda. Happy to be in the
Hi. Show. I'm so glad that you could be with us tonight to talk about what the Ron Paul campaign looks like from the viewpoint of the activist. Because we look at what we put into campaigns, but we don't necessarily look at what we get out of the campaign, which is one of the things that struck me when you and I were talking about this earlier. But we always start about asking our guests something about them, to tell us something about themselves. So tell us something about Dan.
Well, I'm happy to talk about the Free State Project. As a rock climber, living in Rhode Island, New Hampshire is the outdoor playground of New England. So I was familiar with it. I was up there, you know, often every month. It's either climbing, hiking, or skiing, snowboarding. And I was very, very excited when I heard the Free State Project picked it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you actually are planning to move there. Not so much for just that, though, but because it's a good place to live because of the Free State Project, right?
Right. Liberty in our lifetime. For those not familiar with the Free State Project is a plan born of the Internet to move 20,000 liberty-loving individuals to New Hampshire to influence politics, your neighbors, to shrink the size and scope of government, and New Hampshire is the perfect state to pick for that. It already has a very small, a very localized government. There's no income taxes or state sales taxes. All money's local. All politics is local there.
That's true.
The barrier to entry there is very, very low.
Mm-hmm. And that is why eventually the Free State Project decided, after considering other states, they were going to go there. But
right. If I remember the history,
of course. Go ahead.
If I remember the history correctly, I think it came down to Wyoming and New Hampshire. And New Hampshire won because of the activists that were already there before the Free State Project even came about. New Hampshire has naturally been chosen by people that wanted the government out of their lives.
Mm-hmm. And that, of course, can make a huge difference. And it was very serendipitous, of course, because the people had moved to New Hampshire, then found themselves confronted with a Ron Paul presence there. In a state where it was very much, where being a very early primary state, they could make a huge difference. And nobody could have planned that, of course, but here we are.
And we're happy to be there.
Yes. And Ron Paul declared there, didn't he?
No, I believe he declared on the Washington Journal and C-SPAN. He attended last year's Liberty Forum, which is a gathering of free staters for a large conference. And he ended up being the keynote speaker for the last night. And at that point, he was not ready to declare that he was running, but he was already in the exploratory committee.
Mm-hmm.
The Free State Project can't endorse any particular candidate. They don't actually have any politics in them themselves. It's just to gather people in one location for them to find a niche and grow liberty from there. And most free staters naturally were attracted to Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think I've actually met a free stater who wasn't a Ron Paul supporter. So,
but there's always a few exceptions.
Well, but, you know, the world being the way it is, we assume that would have to be true, but I just haven't met one yet. But you said earlier that actually they did a fundraiser for Ron after that event.
Yeah, it happened at my friend's house, and I don't think it was very much planned, but, well, the Free Staters are very, very used to having a day's notice and showing up in large groups, you know, flash mobbing. And
mm-hmm.
He decided to open up his house and have a small campaign fundraiser and allow Ron, there was a video crew there, and Ron was just making a statement, like a press statement, and he ended up raising $15,000 that night alone from people attending the Liberty Forum, but outside of it.
Mm-hmm. And I have to mention here, for people who don't know that $15,000 used to be a huge amount of money to be raised for an entire campaign for libertarians. So this actually sent its own little shockwaves through the movement. It's like, what? Because
yeah,
I remember
when that happened. We like to hope or think that it helped push Ron towards the decision to run.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you live in Rhode Island, and Rhode Island just this week got the signatures so that Ron is going to be on the ballot there.
Yeah, there was a little bit of controversy. The local newspaper ran an article on Monday morning when most campaigns, Ron Paul's included, was not submitting their signatures until Monday and then after the holiday, Wednesday. So they ran an article where only Barack Obama was the only person that had any significant amount of signatures entered into the system. It immediately awoke Ron Paul Nation. I and our meetup group was flooded with emails and phone calls and requests from very concerned supporters asking what they could do. I was actually getting requests from as far away from Indiana saying, you know, what can I do to help? What can I do to make sure Ron's on the smallest state that doesn't have a primary till mid-March, you know, after everything's all set, over with. But the supporters have now gotten used to being able to help in every situation, to see solutions just materialize for every problem that we see put in front of the Ron Paul movement.
Mm-hmm.
So
that makes it, of course, very different.
Yeah, it's very different. Self-enabled and empowered individuals are moving this movement, not any centralized control of the Ron Paul headquarters.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And that's, of course, one of the different forms we're seeing just, you know, become a matter of fact about the way the Ron Paul movement and the Ron Paul people operate. They don't have to wait for anybody to tell them. They just go do it.
Right.
How does it feel to be part of that? To just be on the ground and watch it happening and then to describe what it's like? Because you meet through meetups, right?
Correct. RonPaul.meetup.com is definitely the focal point of finding individuals around you. It is the starting point. If anybody's listening and wants to know, what can I do besides just sending a donation? Go to RonPaul.meetup.com, plug in your zip code. It shows you what groups and what individuals are near you right now getting together, putting their heads together outside of the campaign to try to get Ron Paul elected, to try to get awareness out, to make sure he's on these ballots.
Mm-hmm. And it does more than that, actually. It also enables, it shows you how to go about doing it. So if you don't
it
have
does.
An idea, you can go get one.
Right. Well, once you're on there, you inevitably run into other people in other groups. There is a lot of cross-pollination of ideas, and the website service itself does offer some helpful tips. The most powerful, which I'm sure is the instant email list that you have with your local supporters.
Mm-hmm. And all of that has made it just a very different kind of format for being active. And you've been, of course, active before because you were active in the Free State Project. How do you think that this is different than the Free State Project?
Well, the size and scale of it, the Free State Project only has about 500 individuals moved, with an additional 1,000 people pledged to have moved by the end of the year. Whereas last I looked, the meetup groups for Ron Paul, a number in the 80,000 individuals now signed up as Ron Paul supporters, volunteering their time and energy.
Yes, so there are a lot more people, but also the dynamics are somewhat different too, right? People, they get together and they just immediately take action.
Well, it's come a long ways. Just February and March, everybody got together and they had a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of fear, not knowing what to do, how to go about it. It doesn't take long for a group of motivated and smart individuals to realize we don't have to wait around. You know, why don't we just get this done? Why don't we do this? Why don't we do a sine wave? I mean, how much does spray paint cost? You can go out and make a sign in an afternoon, and it ends up becoming a party. Once you realize you're having fun, the ball really starts rolling.
And that's one of the things that you noticed, right? You noticed that this was actually not just work. It wasn't just in activism in that way. it was something that was positively pleasurable for you.
If it's not required by the state, it's fun. If it's required by the state, it's grueling. The last thing we just went through was collecting these signatures, which is, you know, standing out in shopping plazas in December in New England and asking total strangers to give up their street address. It's not something that I would like to give up. And it's naturally something that, you know, when a stranger approaches you with a clipboard and while you're trying to, you know, get to your warm car, it's atrocious. I don't even understand why this is even required anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it keeps people off the ballot, that's why.
It absolutely does.
Let's be practical about this. But
I keep pointing out over and over again that in New Hampshire, which arguably has one of the most important primaries in the country, being the first primary, it's in their law that they will be the first primary for a presidential race. Their barrier to entry is a single form and a $500 check. And if you show that you don't have the $500, they waive it. Their presidential ballots, you know, they'll have 100 people on each ticket. And it doesn't result in utter chaos. It doesn't result in confused masses. The people in New Hampshire are the most politically savvy individuals I've ever met. You go to a gas station, you talk to somebody that you know, you buy milk from, and he'll give you his opinion about politics, local and national.
And one of the things that's actually very true in New Hampshire is that they expect the political candidates for president to come and sit down in their living rooms and discuss with them what their plans for the country actually are.
Yeah, it really looks like another world when you come from other states. People think being involved with politics is listening to ditto heads and talk radio. Whereas you go to New Hampshire and everybody knows somebody that is in politics, has been in either locally or on the state level as a political mover and shaker. And then when it comes time for every 4 years when the circus of the candidates comes through, absolutely, I think they hit every county, if not every town, for every candidate.
Everyone.
You do get to meet them. Well, it sure seems like it right now. Ron Paul, for, what is it, a 73 fit man?
Mm-hmm.
Puts in more hours. He puts in more hours than I do. On his feet, all day, every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he does a great job. He really makes connection with people. You can see that. And that really plays well in New Hampshire because that's what they expect.
Yeah.
One of the things that I noticed when I was in New Hampshire for primaries is that they had incredible bullshit detectors. They could immediately tell which candidate was just full of it.
Yeah. It all working in Ron's favor right now. You can see how Romney's dropping in the polls over there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because if you sit down and you talk to Ron, you understand that this is a real guy. This is somebody who really understands. They're really on the same page, that he looks you right in the eye and he says it. And when you do that with people in New Hampshire, it doesn't even necessarily matter that much whether or not they agree with you. That's what they respect. That's what they expect, too. So what's the experience been like with... Because you're very involved in the Free State Project. You spend a lot of time up there. What's it been like watching this sort of happen? And what, you know, because you had some experience as a libertarian, but this is a major campaign. How does it feel to be in a major campaign with a freedom candidate?
Well, there's some responsibility that goes along with it, and sometimes that can wear on you, but it's dwarfed by what you're seeing and those around you finally realizing what's going on politically, finally realizing they might be able to do something about it. Being involved with the Free State Project, and these are the super activists that are moving to the Free State now, early, years early, and they're already having an effect up there. Watching what they do is the only experience I had moving into the local meetup group here in Rhode Island. But just knowing that things will get done, that it doesn't, just knowing that it can be fun, and just knowing that you never know with any collection of individuals what talents will come up. You might have a website person, you might have a person that's done radio, you might have, we're lucky enough to have a PR consultant that writes up press releases. I never would have done that. But I did know that as long as the group attracts other individuals, that we will take what talent comes to our way, and it will be motivating for everybody else to find something else, find their own niche to get done,
mm-hmm.
and work from there. So that's pretty much the only confidence that I had coming in, that probably you wouldn't have otherwise. But I don't want to downplay it as insignificant. People definitely were looking for someone to come in and say, you know, let's just get together and do something.
Mm-hmm. But then people do get together, and they end doing much more than they thought they were even possibly going to do.
And
you know, the Ron Paul revolution has taken such interesting forms. I mean, people have done things that nobody ever did before in a campaign.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of candidates right now that are slapping their heads saying, what did we think of a blimp? A flying billboard going across the country.
Uh-huh.
Just amazing. I remember watching recently, Tom Chancredo's dropped out, but Chancredo and Thompson both tried to have money bombs of their own. And it's somewhat interesting that it never made the media that, you know, they raised something on the level of about
$80,000. you saw the announcements, right? And it was like, oh, we're going to do our own money bomb, and we're going to show them. And then it's like, we don't want to talk about that.
Actually, somebody else just pointed out that the other websites for the other candidates have stopped reporting how much money they've raised on a day-to-day basis. As something that Ron Paul started.
Uh-huh.
Ron Paul was courageous enough to put up that flash animation that had a thermometer saying, look, we want to raise $4 million this quarter, and this is where we're at. And, well, now it's been up to $12 million, and by the way, we're past that already.
Mm-hmm.
So other campaigns saw this, and this is called viral marketing, where
mm-hmm.
you give feedback to the user for their actions. So they started to do it, and now they're embarrassed by the money that Ron Paul's making. That the Ron Paul movement's donating, and they've taken it down. So now it looks like it'll probably be sometime after the New Hampshire primary, possibly. That would be terrible. But it might be after the New Hampshire primary before they actually release who rose what funds for the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm. Well, they can hardly afford to talk about it at this point because it's too embarrassing.
And some of them are actually running out of money, too. You use the word afford. Typically, for presidential campaigns, you learn all this stuff being in the meetup group, by the way. I never knew anything about politics in this level. But typically in presidential candidates, your money's front-loaded at the beginning of the campaign, and then as the quarters go by, you raise less and less.
Yes.
Where you see Ron Paul expanding exponentially.
I think that's one of the reasons they're all so unnerved. Because he's breaking all of the rules, and they don't know what to do about it. And their own little rule book, because they tend to follow their own little rule book in a lot of ways, doesn't have a chapter on how to handle us. And I think it's, you know, they're finding that kind of disturbing, which is one of the things about the whole Ron Paul campaign. I mean, I haven't heard as much talk about the fact that this is also non-corporate money as I perhaps would like to hear.
It's a disruptive campaign for a disruptive candidate. Ron has not accepted any political action money that I know of.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he ever will. He has a record in Congress for lobbyists not showing up at his door. They pass him by every time now.
Mm-hmm.
They got tired of hearing Dr. No.
Nope, not going to do it. Nope, 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 nope. And so you're, how does it feel? I mean, the whole thing, though, with the Ron Paul revolution, at some point just a couple months ago, he stopped referring to it as the campaign and started calling it the revolution. And I've also heard him say, thank you for inviting me to the revolution, astounded me the first time I heard it.
I definitely caught it when I heard it, too, and it surprised me, and I pointed out to as many people as I can that he has now taken the position where he's just riding the wave of this, that it's bigger than himself, that this isn't just picking a president. This is taking the country back.
Mm-hmm. And you get a lot of that sense, you know, with people in the Ron Paul revolution, right? They understand they're taking their country back.
They absolutely do. They're very excited about it. You start to see a lot of people that have abandoned politics coming back because they get to see a chance to do what they've always wanted for smaller government. They look at that piece of paper that has, you know, nothing but restrictions on what the federal government is supposed to be doing, and realizing that maybe we can turn back the New Deal. Maybe we can undo the last, you know, 60 to 100 years of American corporate machinations, turn back the clock, and have the country that we're supposed to have.
Yes. How does it feel when you look at that and you hear people talking about it, you have this incredible sense of empowerment, and you know, I mean, it's your part of it, and there's a sense of how far is it going to go? What are we going to accomplish here? Do you feel any sense of limitation whatsoever?
As long as we have the internet, I don't see any limitations at all.
So you just don't think it's possible for them to even limit it? It's just a matter of it's going to happen. And even though you don't have the ideas, you don't exactly know how you're going to do it, there's no sense that really matters, because you know when the time comes, you're going to do it.
There's a lot of inertia and momentum in government, in control structures that are irrelevant now, but they're still winding and plotting and wasting money and fighting over, say, airwave spectrum. With the recent FCC debacle and the new auction.
Yes.
Just imagine internet in your car. You have as many stations as you have websites.
Mm-hmm.
Plus more. But those that are gateways to distribution want to keep their, their scarcity of resources. They want to have the status quo and restrict or decide what information is made available.
Mm-hmm. And that's something that simply the people aren't going to put up with.
It's not what they're going to put up with, and it's what they're discovering they're discovering that it doesn't matter anymore, that they're getting information anyway. I think
mm-hmm.
I was joking with you before that my TV died 2 months ago, and you can barely notice. I just have this big black box in my room now, and
uh-huh.
I haven't bothered moving it out of the house yet. It's a plant stand now, and I think it works great that way.
Uh-huh.
I haven't felt like I've missed news or information. I don't feel like I'm missing out chatting with my friends about the latest programs. I have other things to talk about now, things to do, more time
real
to get
things.
Ron Paul on the ballot.
Yeah, real things. You get Ron Paul on the ballot, you move on to the next project. And one of the things that I've noticed when I go online and I look at the Ron Paul stuff is that there's so much new stuff that it's hard to even keep track of what's going on.
It's hard to
it's
keep
like
track
every
of
day website. There's new stuff.
It's hard to keep track of new websites full of new stuff for the Ron Paul campaign and the Ron Paul movement.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually seen a list of websites that have lists of websites for Ron Paul.
That, you know, have you considered for a moment, let's consider for a moment how intimidating that must seem to the opposition.
Oh.
Because you know they must be paying people to go check. what are they doing now? Oh, my God, no, how are we going to do that?
They is a very large number.
Yes. Oh, yes, and of course, they're actually professionals. They get paid to go do that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do any good anyway. It's like, did you ever get the sense, this is how it feels to me sometimes, I am looking at a breaking dam. And, you know, the first part was, you can just sort of see the cracks in the dam, and then you see these little pieces of, you know, the little spurts of water coming out. And at that point, of course, most people should know you better move back. But I think that they don't get a sense that they better move back.
They can't. The government is slow, and government is stupid. They see cracks in the dam, and they have to form a committee. And then after they form a committee, they have to draw up a contract and put it out for bid.
Yes.
Have the businesses come back with a bid, and then those businesses then subcontract it out. And then eventually you get workers showing up on the scene of what used to be a dam.
Yes, and they go, well,
crack.
Yes, exactly. Of course, and I think that's one of the reasons they couldn't possibly stop it now, because they can't move that fast. They're simply incapable of it. I've never seen any evidence that government was capable of moving fast enough to stop the Ron Paul revolution.
They've tried, and like I said, for every barrier that they put up in front of Ron Paul, for every obstacle that the Ron Paul movement has had put in front of it, solutions has automatically come from this, we'll call it a market, of Ron Paul supporters.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they're almost competing now for whose solution works best. We need billboards. Well, billboards are owned by billboard companies. And they're really expensive, and you have to buy them in three-month blocks. It costs something about $10,000 per billboard. Well, what can we do about it? Can we start a billboard company? Well, you need private property and real estate and places, property owners to give you room for it. What about a blimp? To bring up the blimp again. Because that's what it was, and that's how the idea came about.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just fly a giant billboard anywhere we want it? No.
So they did.
What are the chances of an individual consulting firm coming up with that idea? A group of six that have been doing this for, 30 years.
It's amazing.
It would never come up.
That's exactly right, and it didn't.
And it's the Ron Paul supporters that saw this demand and came up with a solution for it.
Yes. And it isn't a matter of just like one group feeding everybody else great ideas. I think one of the most astounding things is you're seeing the great ideas come from every imaginable direction.
Competing with each other.
Yes.
The Ron Paul Air Corps was another one. My friend Kevin, who's the person who opened up his house for the fundraiser for Ron Paul back in February, decided to fly a banner behind a plane for Ron Paul. It was at one of the straw polls in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we put it up on YouTube, and the next week you see people flying planes everywhere for Ron Paul. And that was followed by the next week by someone, a very creative fellow, who strung up LEDs under the wings of his plane so it would do sky text and blinking animations as it flew over. Fast forward another 2 months, and now you're seeing two planes up there competing with each other at a Ron Paul rally, I think, in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very much like a market, and the solutions come forward just to meet the demand.
Uh-huh.
And it's something that a hierarchical network cannot compete against.
And that's, of course, one of the things. It's like what they used to call in the computer world, like a skunk works. But a skunk works was sort of limited because it was a limited number of people. And this is, tapping the creativity and innovation of, a growing group of people who didn't even know how creative they were.
Social networking.
Yes. Which is, again, a totally and completely amazing thing to watch happen because it's showing just how powerful people can be if they have the correct tools.
And I believe, as long as we have the internet, what we're capable of, we can't even fathom today.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can see it. You can just see that there will be no limit. We will be moving the same tools into other arenas and solving other problems in the same way. Because we can. They proved that.
That we're proving it to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And that's who you really have to prove it to. We had to prove to ourselves that there was a way that we could govern ourselves. So let's look at that for a moment. Is what we're doing with the Ron Paul Revolution the sort of thing that we can then use to govern ourselves? I don't see any reason why not. Because it's all, the limitations were always innovation and the application of knowledge.
Once the barrier comes down to knowledge, it very quickly fades away, and you don't even notice that you had one.
Mm-hmm.
What the individuals in the meetup groups that I'm involved with, every time they bump into a limitation, the limitation is imposed by, artificially by the government.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen after the Ron Paul? The Ron Paul movement is going to go on after Ron Paul, regardless if he gets in or not. And I'm sure there are those, you can talk about those in power that find presidential candidates irrelevant. The established businesses, the complexes between Congress and various large corporations. They're looking at the movement. They're looking at the movement with very different eyes because they're realizing that it's not. They're going to have to adapt to it, or they're going to become irrelevant, or they're going to have to control it.
Well, and it isn't clear that they actually could control it in any way, shape, or form. Any kind of move to control it at this point, to limit it through, let's say, the FCC. Or crashing down on the internet, would be met with a response, and the response would probably be like a meshy response. They would simply move around it and create their own independent internet.
Well, yeah. I mean, remember, we're not supposed to be trading MP3s anymore.
Right.
Or movies,
exactly.
Before they're even released. But intellectual property aside, there are many of us that are starting to discuss with ourselves, what are we going to do with, what is this movement going to become? Let's say Ron Paul is elected. That doesn't mean that we stand out.
No, indeed.
The only similar movement, and the similarities are few and far between, but the only similar movement that I can find is MoveOn.org, which is the last political campaign. But that, in and of itself, is a well-funded, financed, top-down control distribution system of information and goals.
Yeah, and this one is completely substantially different because it is the first non-hierarchical mass movement ever created in history, except, of course, for early Christianity. Which ended with Constantine.
It's impossible to make predictions as to where it's going to go. It's easy to make the prediction that it's going to be great.
Yes. It is. Well, you're the head of the meetup in Rhode Island. And
Begrudgingly.
Begrudgingly. Because that's even probably too much of a hierarchy, right?
Well, it's kind of an irrelevant position. Basically, I get to push and pull levers and buttons on the meetup.com website that others don't get access to.
Mm-hmm.
That's really it. After that, it's just cheerleader, motivator, and counseling people that burnout happens and that you there are ways to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And getting them back on board.
Well, I think that you've been a tremendous inspiration for people who perhaps hadn't experienced the Ron Paul Revolution and now hopefully will. Because I got a letter today from a liberal who said, you know, I wasn't happy. I wasn't particularly thrilled with Ron Paul, but I love the movement. I love the revolution. And I thought that was sort of amazing. I don't doubt that pretty soon they're going to be a Ron Paul supporter. So,
yeah,
ending all the divides. Well,
I like how even now we've been talking about politics this whole time, and we've never once discussed the left, the right, the liberals, the conservatives, the neocons, the Democrats. Those labels don't even mean anything anymore.
Amen.
Individuals find that there is a movement about them and not about somebody else or not about this team or that team. And they'll come on board.
I absolutely believe that. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And you have a wonderful New Year's. And I hope that everything goes really well with the Free State Project and that what's about to happen in Iowa and New Hampshire is going to be everything we could have possibly hoped it could be.
Yep. Now that Ron's on the ballot in Rhode Island, I have run out of excuses for staying in Rhode Island. I'm moving to New Hampshire. So
yes.
The next 2 weeks is knocking on doors, making phone calls, hanging out with Operation Live Free Die, which is other individuals that have moved to New Hampshire to help Ron Paul on the ballot. And then I'm going to sunny South Carolina to do the same there. And
good for you.
It's going to be a great bunch of people.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much. And I hope we have you back again soon to get another report on what's happening with the Ron Paul Revolution.
I'll tell you about the great success story in New Hampshire.
Okay, great. Thanks so much. Good night.
Bye.
And that's our show for today, Friday, December 28th, 2007. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. This remains where we want to go today. It's up to each of us to ensure we reach the destination. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from VBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom. And may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.